as we get older in life and we begin to earn some money and we begin to develop our skills and as we increase our education and as we end up with, you know, a husband or a wife or grandkids or a house or a nice car or fashionable clothes, the latest technologies, we become good at certain activities and certain things, whether it's sports or hobbies or music or whatever it is, and we hone those. And as we do, the temptation that we run into is to begin to say, look at me. Look what I have. Look, I mean, pay attention to me. See what I've done. See what I've got. Look at my house. Look at my car. Look at my stuff. Look at my kids. Look at my family. See how amazing this is. Now, if we're Christians, we do the same thing, but we just change it. Look what God has done for me. Look what God is doing through me. Look how I get to serve. Look how I get to do things. And we still have this same kind of view that says, look at me, pay attention to me, watch what I am and what I'm doing. And here's the thing. In the end, everything, and I mean everything, you and I have or do is from somebody else. Our Father who gave it all to us. And so the challenge that I want to lay out this morning for us as a church is to really remind us, to help us align our thinking with reality. And I'm going to use this, and it's, if you've been following along on my blog, I've been writing a blog for the last 3 months about quotes that really have stuck with me. I'm going back to the very beginning. I'm going to use one this morning as our main idea because I think it encapsulates everything that we want to do as a church. And it's simply this thought. Your glory, my glory, is too small a thing to live for. And if that's what we're living for, and if that's what you're living for, you are settling in this life. Because my glory is too small a thing to live for. So I'm going to unpack this at three levels, and we're going to have some music and some testimonies in the middle of this. But the first place I kind of want to unpack this is at a personal level. Because I, personally, every one of us can say that we are designed, I am designed to reflect God's glory. That's what we're for. Paul, when he was, and a lot of you know who Paul was, he was one of the missionaries in the early church. He wrote letters to a lot of these churches that he started. And one of them was this church in Ephesus. It was a very worldly city. And he's writing a letter to them to kind of encourage them and push them to remember what he had taught them at the beginning. And he said something, this is what he said, this is what he wrote. He's talking to them, and he's talking to these people. He's writing, he's saying, in him, in Christ, we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will. In other words, you've been picked. God knew who you were. He chose you long time ago. He actually selected you to be part of his family. And here's what he says. In order that we, us, who were the first to put our hope in Christ, might be for the praise of whose glory? His glory, not ours. Now, I thought about that, and I said, okay, well, that sounds fine. I've heard that term my entire life. I've been in church, and we exist for the glory of God. What does that even mean, to exist for God's glory? And it's really simply this. It means to live your life in a way that makes him look more like the greatness that he really is. That's it. Living our life in such a way that people can see and say, you know what? He is amazing, and I see it a little bit more because of you. That's all it is. When we say we're living for the glory of God. Because my glory is something too small to live for. And by the way, if you look at the media today, do you realize this is what drives everything in our culture? Twitter would not exist if people were not living for their glory. Instagram, the shares price would go down to zero if people were not living for their glory. You would free up 3 hours a day on Facebook if people were not living for their glory. And you say, well, you know, I'm not like that. I'm not a person out in the spotlight. I don't really want everybody looking at me. I don't want everybody to see me. I'm not about my glory. Do you know how you get a little test on that if you're a social media person? The last time you posted something and you got up the next morning, how many of you, don't put your hands up, check to see how many likes you got between when you posted it and the next day. Why? We want people to notice me, watch my life, see what I'm all about. But that doesn't mean you can't post, because then I get to see all kinds of cool things about you guys. It's awesome. our glory is something too small to live for. And so what is happening is when we come to Jesus, we're basically committing to him that I'm living for someone else's glory beside myself. And this morning, this afternoon, when we do baptism, that's what these people are doing. So let me show you. Here's a list of our baptism candidates this week. So there's 8 of them. Would you guys stand up wherever you are? You don't have to come up. Everybody that's being baptized, stand up where you are. All right. Awesome. These are the people, guys, that are being baptized this afternoon. So take a note of who they are so you can give them a hug, congratulate them. You guys can sit down, except for Ron and Dan. Why don't you guys come on up? Hey, Luis, did I leave my microphone sitting right there? You bring it up. When we baptize people, what they're essentially doing when they come up there and they're being baptized is they're saying to everybody watching, I have chosen to live my life for the glory not of me, but of somebody else. And so these are a couple of our people who are being baptized this morning. And I asked them when we had the class this week if a couple of them would share, and they said they would. And so I'm going to let you go first, Dan. Now, Dan Searley has been a part of Hope Chapel for quite some time, and you've actually been a Christ follower for many, many years. You told me all the way back when you were 12, like that was in the 30s, I think, right? No, I'm kidding. He keeps telling me how old he is, but he's not really. But you've been a Christ follower for a long time, so and you even told me that at one point you did get baptized when you were very young. What's making you do that again today? And make sure you hold the mic nice and close.
Well, I was 12 when I was first baptized. I don't think then that I fully understood how the Lord works. But through the years, I have learned how powerful and how great our Lord is. And now I want to show the world that I know this.
So what's different in your relationship today that kind of triggers all this for you?
3 years ago, I've shared in church for the ones who may already know. Somehow through life, I became bitter and sour. I weren't forgiven the ones that I should have. And you're going to think I'm crazy, but the Lord blessed me with a stroke. But he used that stroke to change my heart and to get me where I am today. And as I told the pastor once, not all miracles are bling, bling, and flashy. To me, that was a miracle. Because he turned my life around so great. And I want the world to know it.
Amazing. Awesome. Dan, thank you. By the way, that's why this is my favorite Sunday the whole year. Because we get to celebrate this kind of stuff. Now, Ron, your story is completely different. So a year ago, you didn't even know who we were, really, except maybe driving by our building.
That's
and
right.
Then you got invited to come to Alpha by someone who was a part of our church. And you got this invitation, and in the process, you encountered Jesus. Just tell us a little about that.
Well, like Pastor said, I was invited to come to the Alpha. And it was a very interesting course. I learned a lot about Christ because I wasn't raised Christian. I was raised Jewish. There was always something missing in my life. I'd never understood what it was until I accepted Christ. I always felt like I was halfway there. Never crossed the finish line. Never understood until I came to church. And then it finally clicked. And through the courses and through Bible study, Weldon, on Tuesday nights, and I'd like to shout out to John Sacco for his volunteering. Come on Sundays before church. He had a nice 6-week course and things like that. And so I got to learn Jesus. I like to learn what it was that I was missing. And it just was amazing that I just came and I accepted him as my Lord and Savior. And I'm very grateful to that. And
you told me that kind of changed your perspective and how
did.
You see life.
I did. I was bitter. I had a very difficult childhood. I don't want to get into that with all you nice people, but I had a very tough childhood, and I was a very angry person throughout my life, and I saw a lot of saw life differently. I was bitter. I judged a lot. And since I've been coming to church, it was like a weight that was just lifted from me. I got to set it down and walk away from all that anger. And I feel so much better. It's amazing what Jesus did for me. And I'm better for it. And I just like to thank everybody here for all your support. And especially just a quick shout out for all the great people that gave us the hot meals for on Alpha. Thank you very much. That was very nice. I don't know if you're all aware of that, but every Tuesday somebody would, you know, have a hot meal for all the group of Alpha. Thank you very much. That was very kind. Thank you for that, and thank you for everyone for your support. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Ron. You guys can go. Thank you. This is why we do what we do and why we exist. And God is inviting us in to say, hey, turn your life over to me and live for somebody's glory who's bigger than yours. It's worth it. The question then that faces us individually is simply this: whose glory am I living for? Because if my glory is too small, is that what I'm doing? Is that not how I'm living? A question that I would encourage you to ask the Holy Spirit to reveal it to you. But there's a second tier to this, and it's tied to the first, because it's the layer that says all of us who are supposed to be living for God's glory in ourselves are put together into this environment as a church. And here's the whole thing. What is true for us individually, my glory is something too small to live for, is true for us as a church. Our glory as a church is something too small to live for. There's something bigger, because God actually built Hope Chapel. The reason that he put us here as a group, as a family, is to build his and to show his glory. Now, we have lots of new people that are coming and part of our church all the time. In fact, I wanted to take a second to recognize, in your bulletin, we have some new members. So if you have been a new member this year, if your name is in the bulletin and you're here, can you stand up? Right where you are. All right, got some more. There we go. Tim's standing. He's already standing because he's ushering it back. Give him a hand. These are people that have decided to commit to Hope Chapel. That's great. You guys can sit down. That's awesome. New members, people who have said, hey, our desire is to be part of a church family where we get to live for something bigger than ourselves. But then as a church, we say, well, that's great, but we collectively are living for something bigger than us. It's just not about us being a really cool church or the in place or having good time on Sunday morning. It's way, way, way bigger than that. So what does that look like? I want to take you to a little story. It kind of helps us out with this. Because our desire as leadership, as we lead the church, is really that our church act and live and plan and pray and do so that God's kingdom is expanded and God is glorified. That's what we want. This is an Old Testament story. It's actually, you can find it in 1 Chronicles 12. Now, it's one of those chapters that if you don't pay attention, you'll just go right past it. Because here's what happened. Let me set it up for you. It's way back. Saul was the first king of Israel. So he's been king for, you know, a couple decades, and remember, he blew it. If you know the story, he wasn't listening to God. He started out good, then he kind of went south, didn't do it really well. And so God chooses David and says, okay, David's going to be king after Saul. And Saul kind of finds this out. He knows it's going to happen, and so he spends an entire decade chasing David down to try and kill him, because he wanted the kingship to go to his own son, not to David. So he chases David all over the place. It takes all kinds of amazing stories of how God provides for David. And we finally get to the point where Saul, his sons, they're killed in a battle against the enemy. And the whole nation says, all right, David, you're the guy. And so you get to 1 Chronicles 12, and it's kind of this odd little chapter, because it really is this whole list of everybody that came to swear allegiance to David. And so you read this whole thing, it's kind of weird. And so what happens is they do it by the tribes of Israel. And so they'll go, you know, from this tribe, they brought 6,000 men who were really good at war. And, you know, these people brought 4,000 men who were awesome with the bow and arrow or the spear. And you kind of have this whole list of people came and they're swearing allegiance. And all this is going on, and you're reading all these people who are coming to David, remember, because the kingdom is kind of a mess. because you have Saul who was king, now David's going to be king. They're flipping families. There's a little bit of civil unrest in the middle of all this stuff. And right towards the end of the chapter, there's a fascinating little verse that I think pertains to us. And it goes like this. Verse 32. So they're making this whole list of the different tribes. And it says, from Issachar, these are men coming to David, men came who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. 200 chiefs with all the relatives under their command. Here's another version. I like the way this one puts it. From the tribe of Issachar, there were 200 leaders of the tribe with their relatives, and all these men understood the signs of the times and knew the best course for Israel to take. They looked around, they saw the world they lived in, they saw the way the country was, they saw the needs of the country, they saw what had to happen, and it says these men understood what was at stake. And they knew that they had to act a certain way and move in a certain direction. They knew what to do. Family, we live in a time where the needs are huge. In our community, in our families, in our country. And when we look around and we look for the signs of the times and saying, okay, so what is going on? And what do we need to do? If we want to be people who understand the times and say, this is what we got to do, what is that for us? Well, you just have to consider the town that our church is placed in. Because if our church is here for a glory that's bigger than our own, and we want to understand the times and act accordingly, what does that mean for us? You know, here, let me show you some stuff. You know, Pine Hill, and this is just Pine Hill, and I realize a lot of us are from the surrounding towns, but this is the town that God has placed our church in. Pine Hill has about 10,500 residents, all kinds of ethnicities all the way across the board. 1 in 7 lives in poverty in our town. It's not that much different in some of the surrounding towns. We have roughly 1,800 students. That means 20% of our population are kids and youth, of which 1,000 are in sixth grade or less, and 56% of those are eligible for free or reduced lunches because of their financial situation. And there's a whole lot more we could talk about. You can actually go look all this up. But here's the thing. 50% of the people in this town have zero connection to faith or God in any way. And there's a whole other percentage that kind of grew up that way but still aren't living that way. And you look at this and you say, my goodness, the need, the times, what we need to do is so huge. And so as leaders, we say, well, what does that mean? If we're as a church supposed to live, our glory of just being this wonderful church that has all these fun little things, we do the picnic, we do the baptism, we just have all this fun together, that's just too small. It's not big enough. There's too much out there that we need to understand. And so as leaders, as we've kind of brainstormed this and thought, so where is God taking us? There was an interesting quote that came from a guy named P.K. Bernard, and he said, a man without a vision is a man without a future, and a man without a future will always return to his past. So if we don't understand, like these men from Israel, who says they understood the times and knew what to do, if we don't have that, we will only ever do what we've always done, and we will die. And we will make no difference. So what does that mean? So here's what we've decided. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we're always doing as a church, but I wanted to highlight two things that we are planning on focusing on as a church for the next 3 to 5 years. A lot of our energy is going to be focused there. A lot of the things we do are going to be focused there. Our planning, our brainstorming are going to be focused in these areas. Here's the first. We looked at this and said, our focus for outreach as a church is going to be on the children and youth of our area. And you saw from those statistics, there is a massive need in this area. Judy, I don't see Judy here this morning, but she has shared in the past. And by the way, I was going to recognize Judy this morning. She's stepping down from leading our youth, having done it faithfully for 15 years. She's been involved. It's been amazing. Say thank you to her because she's been doing this, but she is stepping down. We're actually going to need to do some new things on this in the fall. But the need is tremendous. The confusion among youth, children themselves, and we have teachers in our church here that teach that'll tell you the horrible stories in our elementary and middle schools there is such a wide open thing. And we said as a leadership, we said, well, we're not trying to do what God isn't doing, so where's God at work? Do you know we have a wide open door because we have a good relationship in our schools, with our police chief, with our mayor, with our town. They're looking for help. They're looking for people to come alongside them to make a difference. We want to be the hands and feet of Jesus. And we think that this is an area that God is, and he said, you know, Jesus said, look at the fields, they're ripe for the harvest. We believe this is ripe for the harvest. But it's going to take all of us. Ain't going to happen with 10 of us. And so what's going to happen over the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to be looking for ways to do this, ways to engage. We're not so much looking at coming up with our own ideas, as much as going to find out where are the needs in the town and how can we partner along where God has already worked. And our ultimate goal in 5 years is to actually own or have a facility available to us that is outside of our church that can minister in the town to teens and to children in a way that we cannot in this building. That's a big goal. And that's going to take finances, it's going to take resources, it's going to take what we don't have today. And so we got to be praying and saying, God, this is what we think you're leading us to. It's something way bigger than ourselves, and it's for your glory. That's what we want to do. So that's part one. Here's part two. We want to plant a new church. Now, a lot of people have a picture in their head when I say this. We don't exactly know what this is going to look like. We believe that we'd like to get bigger. We'd like to see more people come to know Jesus in our church. You've heard some of these testimonies this morning. It's fantastic. We want to see that. But we are limited because of where we are in Pine Hill. We want to see God's kingdom spread out from here. So one of our goals in the next 3 to 5 years is to plant a new church, a new worship gathering, something that looks different maybe than what we're doing today. Well, in order to do that, we need someone to lead that. So, effective July 1st, so what's that? 8 days? We are bringing Skeeter Seifert on staff, part-time. Come on up, Skeet. See, I didn't make them come up on the stage, but you have to come up on stage because right. you're staff it. Guy. And so what's going to happen is we are starting something. We're within our group of churches. We're something called a greenhouse church. And what a greenhouse church does says we want to empower somebody who feels called by God to go start something new, to train and equip and let this person develop all the skills and the vision needed to do the thing that God has called them to do. So that's what we're going to be doing with Skeeter over the next few years. So, Skeeter, as I told you, how did you ever get to this point? Because when I knew you 10 years ago, this would have been about the furthest thing from your mind. So how did you get to the place where you actually felt called by God to do something like this?
Yeah, that's an understatement. But yes, it's been a slow build probably over the last 5 years or so. I've been seeing God's hand in my life, and I've been feeling a stirring, and I've gotten a lot of confirmation from folks right here in this room, support, people saying, hey, I see something in you, I feel like God's calling you to something. It's like, oh, maybe I should start thinking about that. And then the things started to kind of fall into place. Stuff started to kind of make a little bit more sense. I started to feel more of a pull, and I'm seeing that it doesn't really matter where I am, there's always opportunities to disciple people, to get into really cool conversations with some lady at the grocery store, a good friend of mine. You know, just stuff is happening, and God's saying, look, I've got opportunities for you to share my love to these people. And there's a statistic right now. It's somewhere around 70% of the average population will never step foot in a church. Never. I actually think that statistic might be a little bit higher than that in reality. And for a multitude of reasons, you know, maybe they just aren't grown up that way. Maybe they have some wounds or some bad experiences with the church in the past. Regardless of the fact, they're not going to come to Hope Chapel as it is here this morning. So how do we reach them? Because they still need the love of Jesus just like everybody else. And that's where I feel God's put his hand on me and said, look, I need you to go after that. I need you to bring the church to them. Go be the church in your community, where you already are, how I'm already using you in relationship with these people.
So then in the next couple of years then, right, you're part of this whole development process. What are you looking for God to do in and with you or through you over these next few years as you learn and develop?
Yeah, so as you already said, we don't really know what this is going to look like. We've got some kind of vague ideas. So the number one thing would just be some vision and direction, really clear vision We're taking little steps.
Right, you've got
every
ideas,
day.
But it hasn't all crystallized yet.
We're just kind of following day by day, and every day it's like, oh, okay, I see that. Okay, all right, God, yeah, I'll go there. We'll do that. But I don't know what it looks like in 6 months, in a year, in 2 years. So, clarity of vision, direction. Honestly, workers. You know, we need people to partner with us. We need support. We need people that feel this pull on their life to partner with us, to come alongside of us, and to be the arms and the feet of Jesus. And honestly, the one thing that I've been praying for lately is just, it's more fire. Hmm. More fire from God.
Awesome. Now again, something that's big, it's faith, because we don't necessarily know what it looks like. We just believe that God is calling us into something bigger. So the question really then for you is, what's your role in this? Because if your glory is something too small to live for, and if our church, just being that kind of church that everybody loves, is too small to live for, and we have these visions that God has placed in our lives to say, this is where I want you to go, and it's going to take faith, and the only way this is going to happen is if I do it, not if you do it. What do you do? Well, it's not that hard, actually. Just pay attention. Listen to what God is saying. And then, jump in. Be a part of it. Give. Be sacrificial. I told you at the start of this year, I challenged you to do three things. To pray, to give of your resources to God, and then to serve other people. Just do those things. And as opportunities come up, jump in. Talk to people like Lindsay and Skinner and say, what is it? Tell me more about this. Let me know what's going on. Be part of a discipleship family that's saying, hey, we're going to engage with the children in our community. We're going to do this thing over here. We're going to be a part of it. Do all those things. And if it seems really scary to you, like it's not something you are comfortable with or you want to do, it means it's probably just about right. And let me tell you, if we are in the center of what God does, it is the single safest, best place to be served. Not necessarily easy, by the way, but it'll be awesome. And God will do some amazing things. Well, there's one more thing as we take a look at this. Because if we start at the individual and say, hey, our glory is something too small to live for, and that means as a church, it's not just about us, because as a church, our glory is something too small to live for. There's something bigger than us. There's one step even bigger than that. Because we are part of a whole community of churches, not just in this country, but around the world. We are part of something that is way bigger than ourselves. We're part of something called the Christian Missionary Alliance, which is a denomination. But I'll tell you this, it's not just that we're part of that group of churches, we are part of the church. And I want to be very clear on this. We are not competing with the other churches around us. We are not seeking to be better than them. We are not seeking to lift ourselves up. We are not seeking to be the in church. We are not looking to be the church that says, hey, they're better than them. And we look at other people and go, they're kind of weird. Yeah, you don't really want to go there. They're so legalistic. No. That's not what this is about. Because we are part of this amazing group of churches where Jesus said, look, this is my bride. This is who's changing the world for my glory. And so we are going to be working alongside in any way we can to see the kingdom expand. So what does that look like? Because really, when it comes down to it, God desires to spread his glory everywhere, right? Not even just here in Pine Hill, but he wants to do it everywhere. So we see pieces of that. So in the middle of all this, and as we look at all these things, there's other opportunities that we do. And here's some of the ones that are going on right now. We are partnering and having a relationship with the Table of Philadelphia. A lot of you know Gino and Jill. Kirk Rudo, who are working in Philadelphia. So we're building a partnership there. So a lot of what Skeeter and Lindsay are going to be doing, they're actually being trained by Gino. He's kind of connecting with our leadership team. We're building this network of being able to support each other. We're not just on our own. And it goes in both directions, by the way. So those who have never been over to actually hang with Jill and Gino in one of their brunch churches, I would highly recommend you do that. It's actually a really good time. So we actually get to do that. But then not only that, we're actually sending some people who are called to the larger thing. So we have a missions team going this week, Saturday, right? Right? We're leaving Saturday for the Dominican Republic. And we also have some people that are going with one of our sister churches, Loving Grace. They're going to Ensenada, or to Miami with Envision as well. And then, of course, you all heard last week from Corinne, who is serving with a whole different organization, but doing that out in the Middle East and is back for a little bit before she goes back. So we have all these opportunities here to see and partner, to see God's glory expanded past our church. So we would do this, and I want to ask the missions team to come on up, and that includes everybody. That includes Corinne, that includes John, you guys, whoever are going to envision. Everybody come on up. Come on up to the front. So these are the beautiful people that we're sending to represent us in the country where Americans are dying at a regular rate in resorts. But see, that's the key. They're dying in resorts, not on the mission field. So you guys are as safe as it can be. Don't drink the water. So, Louise, could you just briefly tell them kind of what you guys are going to be doing when you're down there? Like, what are some of the things that you're going to be doing?
This is going to be our fourth time we go to visit to help Rick Romano and Tommy on Mission 2535. We're going to be whatever needs to be done that day, anything from construction to BDS or to just basically just do prayer walks, people just to interact with them. It's good. They're going to, I think we are just open to just do what needs to be done on that given day and, you know, follow our heart to answer God's pointing out to the to just not only bless them, but actually bless ourselves. One of our experiences on a mission is like you go to serve, but you ended up finding that you're being served at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's a very powerful growing experience in that. It's actually almost like more than a two-way street. You actually get a lot in return from just sacrificing and just going on that mission.
Awesome. Thank you. And then, of course, those going down to Envision in Miami are doing very similar to what they did last year. There's a lot of work there with the local people, with kids, working in schools, working with VBSs. And Corinne, as she told us this morning, is going to go play soccer for Jesus in other places. Right? So, we're going to close shortly and go have a party. Right? Around the lake. But I'm reminded of a story that I wanted to finish with. There were three bricklayers. And they're working beside each other on a wall. And a man came up, and he said to the first one, he said, what are you doing? And the man was kind of sarcastic. He says, what does it look like I'm doing? I'm laying bricks. Okay. So he went to the second guy, and he said, what are you doing? He says, oh, I'm building a wall. That's cool. He went to the third guy and said, so what are you doing? He says, I am building cathedral. Every one of them doing the same thing. And you know what the difference was? Vision. In fact, I didn't say this earlier, but look at this quote. We need vision, but we don't fall in love with vision. We fall in love with people. Deeply loving people will always provoke and cultivate the greatest mission and vision. And that's why God is calling us into something bigger than just us. Because our glory is something way too small to live for. So here's what I want you to do. Lay your brick. And don't think that you're just laying your brick and then it doesn't matter. You're not just building a wall. You're building something amazing and huge that maybe you can't see, but God does. And it's His glory that will result. And if we live like that, I guarantee your life will hold more satisfaction and fulfillment than if you live for your own glory.